the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies or practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply bow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings, dutyampi tatyampi sabaha, again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. So a reminder, on Sunday mornings we record groups and make them available to monthly donors. What would you like to look at this morning? Nikki?
Well, I was looking at something this morning when I was doing some recording and listening, and it's inspired somewhat by the recent email class and also by a place, a workshop I've been having around a place I've been stuck lately.
So inspired by the email class we're doing on communication.
Right.
Yes.
And the Enneagram.
And the Enneagram.
And I was appreciating in the current class there was a sort of a format laid out for each of the types about core message and the more acceptable message and then the way it gets presented in the world and the talk that gets used daily. And there wasn't really one even of the types that I usually look at for me that really stood out of, yes, that's the way it works for me. I think the one that I got the most juice out of, though, was the eight saying, don't mess with me. There's a part of me that I realized really relates with that.
You related to that, don't mess with me.
Yeah. But even though I've never ever thought I was an eight, but I can see that, I can see that happening. But what I was seeing is, I was seeing more about how the conditioned process works. Not new in a way, but just seeing it in a different light. So I was really seeing how there's a really karmic kick in the gut type feeling. You know, the one. That's when, you know, it really hits conditioning and wherever it feels most vulnerable.
Where conditioning hits that, that most vulnerable part.
Right.
You feel that kick.
And it feels to this being like a really strong hurt. Like, and that it, it doesn't come with words when it's that first just mm-hmm. sensation, mm-hmm. but the basic words, I think, are, it's not fair. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not fair, you don't understand. And it's that sort of sense of, you know, I'm really good and I don't know why you're saying things that imply yeah. I'm not really good, yeah. even though they're probably not saying things that imply I'm not really good. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And, so there's that sensation
yeah.
that it doesn't have any words attached to it, but it sets off this whole cascade of, yeah. you know, meaning about yes. it. Yeah.
And it's a, you know, it's a real vulnerable place. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of emotion with it. And I realized that then, so the layer that gets put on that really quickly from conditioning is the defense, the justification, the extreme degree of righteousness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, basically, you can't do that to me, sort of, you know, mm-hmm. It feels so much better than the hurt, mm-hmm, you know, to be
in that,
to be so right and,
Yeah. And which, so I think what you're saying is that, you know, even though you're not particularly relating to a type, you know, the 1 through 9,
yeah,
that you're seeing that overall process.
Right. Yes.
That, you know, and in fact, I've heard it, you know, said it's, we have all the types in
right.
us, actually.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I can see all of them in this, actually,
yeah.
in some
yeah.
degree.
Yeah.
And so then what I saw that. So, and I'll see if I can kind of get this back. So having those two core karmic things in place mm-hmm. is then the conditioning, but it feels like the being sometimes doing it, is looking out for that process going to happen. So uh-huh. there is like on the lookout.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and seeing it where it isn't happening.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So scanning,
mm-hmm.
just scanning for that
right.
process that the conditioning hooks us with, or, you know, that just starts that whole, the attention going to that
right.
that
and,
process.
And not consciously, but just it sets up a screen through which life is something mm-hmm. that will therefore cause me to have that experience.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And of course then you have that experience.
Yeah.
And what I was seeing is, you know, that so going to the karmic defense of righteousness not only perpetuates that conditioning,
yeah.
but it perpetuates the one underneath that, the belief that
uh-huh.
that there is something that needs to be defended,
uh-huh.
that believes that I'm going to be hurt, that, you know, uh-huh. I, you know, it's hard to, the language, but it just keeps the whole package.
Yeah. You might say it perpetuates the relationship with conditioning,
yeah.
with ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it does. It perpetuates the relationship with ego, which then perpetuates a perceived relationship with the world
uh-huh.
that isn't so.
Right. Yeah. That perceived relationship with, it sounds like, you know, ego, and it gets translated as the relationship with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm reminded is that, you know, the quote in the email class from Anais Nin. We don't see the world as
yeah.
it is, but as we are, and
as
that's what
are.
You're just
right.
describing,
right.
that
mm-hmm.
whole process by
yeah.
which we filter.
Yeah, and I recognize that the behavior that ego's going for in this, and that I sometimes actually do, is, that's it, I'm out of here.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're, you know, if you know, if it's, it depends on the threat level. I mean, it's almost like, you know, one of those warning systems, you know, depends on what level we've reached, and if it's, you know, if it's the real kick in
uh-huh.
the gut, if it's the real, it's not fair, don't mess with me, you know, the response is, whether it's overt or just withdrawing, I'm done.
So a little clarification, that I'm out of here is, I'm out of here with whatever with it is whatever that you're is in, not, not with ego, but with.
It can be so handy.
Right. I mean, that becomes the clue then to watch who you need to be out of there with. But it gets filtered
to, I got to be out of here.
Without there. That's the conditioned response. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not dealing with this.
Right.
And I recognize, though, I mean, and I see that. I mean, that's such a familiar process and when the real level of threat is perceived. But I really saw that it happens in much lower levels of threat in different ways. You know, it's not the drama, it's not the extreme, but it's the same process, you know. I is not seen for who it believes it is. I wants to defend itself. This process is not worth going through. I'm just not going to deal with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically, I quit, even if it's something little or something big. And it's, I mean, it's not new, but I hadn't seen how pervasive it is and how, when it's that really core one, how difficult it is to see that I'm not the one that's being threatened.
How difficult it is to see that you're not the one that's being threatened. And that, as you say, I mean, it can be interpreted as small and large assaults. But what I hear you saying is what it does is just, it serves to keep us in relationship with that.
With that whole system.
Yeah, to just reinforce ego. Keep us isolated is what I heard too. You know, I'm out of here sort of thing. It's like pull back and stay in relationship with that system.
Right, and in the email class assignment to spend time with the mentor, hearing how the being really is, the mentor brings the being back to life and goodness and, you know, all the things we all are. And from the condition, I don't know how to, again, it's, you know, the I and the me and the, I don't know quite how to say this, but from the, from within that conditioned system, you can hear those things about the being, but I don't really know who that person is without that sometimes, you know? Yes, I know I'm all those things that we are when we're not conditioned, but I often, because I'm stuck in that pattern, don't experience the being in that way. It's like foreign territory.
Yeah. So even listening to what's authentic, if it's listened to from that place of identification, you know, that place where it's all being filtered.
Yeah, and it's more subtle than that. It's not even, you know, not even listening from that place, but imagining if I get up in the morning into that an unconditioned place and go through the day that way, what would that look like? You know, I mean, because it happens in moments, but I often don't experience myself as the one who's not that process. So it's not that familiar and it's not that believable that that's really what life could be like if I stopped listening to that system. So who is this being really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it is all those good things the mentor says about life and people and and you and how you're this way and all the things. And, you know, I don't doubt them. It's just that my really, really real experience of life still resides so often in that conditioned system, especially in the places where it's really up against it. And I guess that's the place I've been looking at lately. So,
So seeing a whole lot with this email class. And, you know, the thing that arises is when you talk about that. I mean, that's why we sit.
Sorry,
it's why we sit.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, is to have an experience of watching that whole system and have those moments of knowing what a knowing or a being outside of that system. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, what you say, that it's so difficult when we're in that system, and it's just so conditioned to be in that relationship and to be filtering all of that.
One of the things that just came up as I was listening to that is, it's helpful, therefore, to be up against those really real places, because if we use those as a place to look, we see what we can't see when we're in the kind of not so really real places that just feel like life. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times I'm just going along and that process is happening, but it's not happening in a painful way, so I'm not even noticing it's going on. But when it happens in a way that, then there's an opportunity to say, but what's really going on here?
Yeah. It gets your attention.
Gets your attention, right.
Whereas, the other way, it's just kind of can get fall into habit.
It doesn't seem so bad. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jen?
Just quickly on that. To me, it underlines perfectly the why a change in behavior is critical to a change in consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because in my experience, what's happening there is that from that conditioned place, we're choosing the same conditioned behaviors over and over and over. And it's very tricky when we watch ourselves do those things to see the goodness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it feels like, but it's true.
Yeah. I have the proof.
Yeah. Look at what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's much harder to disidentify from the behaviors, it feels like, in some ways, because those feel so real and true that I keep doing those things.
Yeah.
But that when we break that, just anything, just a tiny little, normally I would do this and do that, even though it seems like, well, what difference is that going to make?
Yeah.
But it makes such a huge difference. It just changes that mirror, even for a split second.
Yeah. So just that really... importance in a change of behavior, and I love that point that you make. It doesn't have to be
giant,
complete
from
revolution of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, just the tiniest little behavior change, and we need to be present.
Yes.
I mean, that's probably
the
greatest
thing,
gift of that little, you know, we have to be present to see that, and then we make that, such a little change.
Yeah. So from what you're saying, it's very likely the actual behavior change is sort of the secondary icing on the cake, but what's actually shifted is if there's the presence to see that there's a behavior change possible, and then to make that decision...
Yeah.
The shift has already happened.
Right.
But it does seem critical to go forward and actually, it creates that gap.
Uh-huh.
And in that gap is where we see what we are.
Yeah.
You know, it's only in the gap.
It is that.
Yeah. And it's constantly being, that gap is being filled with,
you
know, conditioned thoughts and behaviors and, you know, and then I do this and then I look at me and I'm this way and why do I keep doing that? And how can I be good if I'm...
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's just a great reminder.
It is. And I just
go ahead. I love that. Just the gap.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. The system for me can go, what gap? Gap? What gap? You know. and to keep our attention on that possibility.
Yeah. And it's so great, isn't it? Because it's like, what gap? What gap? But there's a gap. What gap? What gap? Gap. You know, literally, it's looking at the negative space
It's kind of back to that everything going through this filter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the filter of the no gap.
Yeah, exactly.
And
attempting to fill the gap, but the thing is, it actually can't, because the gap. You know, it's like, at least this is the image that I look at with like. You know, physics and stuff, that in fact most things are mostly nothing, right? So it seems like, I'll bet you anything, the gap is mostly what's there. It's just that there's that constant, look here, look here, look at the something, look at the something, look at the something, look at the something. And so the habit is to just string those together and seem to see the something always. Yeah.
It's wild, that's that whole system. Thank you. Phil, and then I'm going over here.
So, yeah, kind of along with that, but what has been dropping in for me as you practice all the different things, the email class, and there's a lot of other things practicing at this point, and is that it, Leitz called it, I think, it's the secret to everything. And it's nothing new, of course. It seems the secret to everything is, at least for me, is participating in that way of, you know, like just jumping in wholeheartedly to life. And it's like I was seeing an image of a baby bird in the nest, and if it never jumped out, you know,
wholeheartedly
it's going to just die in its nest. And it feels that's exactly, you know, if I don't just make that movement to participate, then it's like I can almost feel a shrivel up, withdraw, you know, dying in the nest, so to speak.
Boy, I think we can, I mean, I don't know, I think I could I totally went there when you said that, that feeling.
Yeah.
You just like, you know, that withdrawal, and you just know at that moment, oh
you
my
do.
Gosh.
You do.
You know, everything just kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's this small, so small, this participating, is kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier, but that it's just an adjustment. I was noticing when I was meditating, you know, it's just an adjustment to, oh, there's a, you know, going off with a distraction to moving here, and then I'm participating. I forgot what Jen said, but I've just moved into
the gap or the
you know, it's just something else, but that place of presence. I'm present now, and that's what participating in life is just moving to present. And then it's like, you know, as we know, that's why this is nothing new, but it's like the gap just becomes very, very large. Right?
Yeah.
And you know, life just flows and follows life, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, I notice if resistance comes up and there's brakes put on, then, you know, everything comes to a crashing halt. And yet that's not a problem because it's certainly very different from the experience of participating. And then there's just that adjustment.
The adjustment.
Which the breath is very helpful with.
That's great. I mean, it's the same. It's that small behavior change.
That's the way I was thinking.
You know,
behavior change. Yeah.
There's. It just doesn't require. You know, a big deal.
No.
You know, it is just it's making that little adjustment, coming back to the present, and then in that place of presence, we are participating 100%.
Exactly. And you know, and I even think of how, you know, how it is when you're at least for me, the edge of a swimming pool and about to jump in, there's a big breath. And there is a push from life. I mean, it's like, it's in some ways it seems big, you know, but it isn't. Still, it's the same thing. But it's like there's this, really, even like when I'm going to go say something to somebody, maybe that's a little hard to say, there's this breath, and I feel the push, like the hands behind me, like Sherry. Okay, it's now or never, you know, kind of thing. And then do it.
And do it.
And that's the behavior change, you know.
And the rush. You know, I call it a rush.
It is.
It's an alignment with life, isn't it?
Yeah, then when you do, and when you, even that, even just saying that and doing it, going towards it, is the rush.
Yep.
And then whatever you had to do was easy.
And
fun. It's a miracle, I mean.
And such a different experience than that place of like, and not going for it.
Oh, you know? And then there's that shrivel up in the nest.
Shrivel up in the nest.
Yeah. So anyhow, it was. It's just been exciting for, and then of course, just seeing what life has to offer in those ways, you know, is exciting for us too. That's why I think we love practice so much. But anyhow, that's kind of what's up and
interesting,
hopefully, and having fun with.
It's not lost on me that you're wearing participation.
That's true.
Participate.
It's true. For quite some time.
Is that art imitating life? Or
yeah, they didn't even really realize. Yeah, exactly. It's just the shirt that I happened to be wearing. Yeah. But it's it. It really is, to me, it really is the secret to everything. I don't know if it's just because of my Enneagram type or what, but but I don't think so. I think just putting ourself out there full, you know, then life just, it's like jumping, I guess, in the river of life, and then life just swoops us along. And as we say, it's effortless. But it's that, you know.
It's like, we don't jump out of the nest just once. We get to jump out of the nest
over and over.
And that same sort of newness.
Yeah, and every time we fly.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Sherry. Well, I love that analogy of like, you know, being at the edge of the pool, you know, and I've been really noticing a lot lately that when there's a sort of a, you know, that sort of like urge to ask for clarification or guidance, the way that conditioning just like pulls me back, you know, it's like a rope around me, you know, and I can't jump in the pool because it's got me so strongly, and then what it takes, you know, because it's almost like sometimes there's like has to like you have to just like really trudge through to be able to speak. And I've been looking at something, it's maybe for the last few weeks or even a month, that I realize conditioning hasn't let me ask for guidance around. And so being here, of course, it's so safe, and I love that. Like it just feels like, oh, I can just say it. You know, because actually I know, you know, this dropped in during meditation, that, you know, it's telling me like, you know, well, you're going to make a fool of yourself, or you're going to blah, 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 blah. But really it doesn't want to be revealed,
right.
Of course, right? So it has to do around the recitation, not of the rosary, but the we are here to end suffering. And lately I've gotten a lot of jumble from conditioning around, oh, suffering, 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 suffering. It's all about why do we have to keep saying suffering? Like, you know, and almost so that it's like when I'm reciting it, it's got me feeling so heavy, you know? And it's like there's this like, you know, I want to say, you know, we are here to feel joy. We are here to love each other. We, you know. So I just thought I was just going to throw that out, like, because it's got me in a tangle around it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm reminded of what we were first talking about, you know, that just how it, it'll just throw whatever out there to get our attention, and then we become in relationship with it. And that's what sounds like now it has, it's thrown the bait out, you know.
Right.
So, sounds like something interesting to, you know, explore. What you've seen about that? What, you know, any thoughts about that? About?
Well, I think what you just said really struck me, that thing of that it's like I'm in relationship with conditioning. So here I am doing this recitation, right, where, you know, before after meditation, and it's got me. So obviously that seems like the really important place. The other place around it that I've been recording about is that it does feel to me like in our practice that one of the things that I've really benefited from and loved is that it feels like turning the attention to what life wants, you know, what life is offering, not other voices and what they're saying, what they're trying to drag us into. And and so that actually has been really helpful. So in a way, even though I'm in relationship with conditioning around this, almost every time I say it, it does kind of remind me, like, I don't want to be in relationship with suffering. I want to be over here with life. And so I never really saw that before this moment. But it doesn't realize it, but maybe that's kind of helpful that it's trying to.
And isn't that the best thing, when you can blow it at its own game, you know, and has provided you with
an
opportunity to see more.
And even this, like the willingness to be able to say something, of course, participation, that it's like it allowed me to see that, which I wasn't seeing, so that it's like now, instead of it being like suffering, it's kind of like meditation bell,
you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. It can be that reminder. Oh, I get to drop that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get to drop that too.
Yeah.
Get,
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ashwini.
I am just loving these conversations. And it's always the case when we get together with Sangha that what one is looking at gets answered in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And so what dropped in answer to what I'm looking at, but because it was offered, is something that I heard Sherry say once, which moved me profoundly. She said, God does not have a problem with the devil. Only the devil has a problem with God.
Wow.
And, you know, to me, that last conversation really, the last three conversations really captured it. Mm-hmm. Because only ego has a problem with suffering. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's only when we're in that egocentric place that suffering is something wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's such an inherent orientation.
Yeah.
That everything is being looked at through that lens we started to, which is an orientation of separation, of outside of life. And when we are in that orientation, that's the lens that we're looking at. No matter what we're doing, we're not in the process of being alive. We're in the process of relating to ego as an orientation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if I'm centered, I could talk about anything, and it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because center accepts all of it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that place of presence we're talking about, I mean, it's like I spent a lot of time in England, and it's that the subway station, mind the gap. It used to drive me crazy. But it's such an important instruction that only ego would have a problem with. Right? Which is pay attention to the gap. And to that place of knowing that the only reason I'm having a problem is because I'm in the problem place.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of related to something I've been looking at, because there's some beautiful places in practice when everything is going well. Like there's so much gratitude, there's so much love, there's so much kindness. There's nothing I'm suffering over. And yet there is that ability for the feeling of dissatisfaction to start to be a process looking for content. And that we're so conditioned not to, going back to the first conversation, we're so conditioned not to be familiar with a place of abundance. It's not easy to rest in it.
Yes.
It's not easy to rest in the gap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what I was looking at around that was, it's not easy because conditioning wants to make it permanent, right? That I is something that is fixed over time, and as a process, that's what I'm used to. I am somebody monolithic who doesn't change over time. That's who I am. And this feeling that I've been looking at of gratitude and love and abundance and is flux. There is no fixed experience of it.
Yeah.
So if only when I'm present in the moment, participating with the breath, do I have a sense of what it is in the moment. Mm-hmm. Like there isn't a sense of goodness that is permanent. There isn't a sense of joy that's permanent.
Yeah.
That all of what the mentor reflects about life is just movement. It's not fixed. So if I'm not in the moment, I feel what I am. When I'm in the moment, there's nothing mirroring what I am, and so there's no experience of that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just no way.
Yes,
we can't know love. We can't know. I mean, there's just no fixed concept or no fixed way that expresses itself. And we can only
participate.
Participate moment by moment. And and as you say, into the abundance that life offers. And and then to be available to that, and then we get to experience it, and
and not attached to that it's a someone,
and not attached that it's
a
someone.
I'm not someone good, but goodness is expressing, however it's expressing in the moment.
Yeah.
And actually, the best experience of it is not to necessarily have it mirrored, especially by conditioning. That I am not good, that goodness is what is expressing through me is such a different orientation. And to really pay attention to not let that process of making that a problem, because I am not reflected in every moment.
I'm just thinking, think of that. Think about not taking things personally.
Yes.
You know, how it just goes to, like, not taking the suffering personally or the assaults personally, but all of it, you know, not to take the goodness personally.
That's
not,
right.
You know,
none
of it to just,
yeah. And the last thing, because this is really what I was looking at, was the word isolation. I saw this somewhere that says, isolation is the extent to which you are in a self.
Wow.
That the self draws the boundary between me and what is. And so how isolated I feel, or how I feel, is a direct reflection to the extent to which I'm identified. Because that's the only thing that takes me out.
Boy, as you say that, I mean, that's another thing I think we all have an experience of. Boy, does it really feel separate, you know? The more you separate, the more disconnected from life, the more isolated one feels.
Yes, and it's so pernicious that dissatisfaction process is constantly looking to make a feeling of a moment-by-moment aliveness a problem. Because it's not permanent, or it's not it's not familiar, or whatever.
And I just love that what you started with, you know, that God does not have a problem with the devil, but the devil has a problem with God. I mean, it's conscious, compassionate awareness can hold it all.
Because it's not a process of separation.
And not a process of separation. And, you know, boy, resistance, as soon as we see that, raises, we know that we're on that, you know, the devil having a problem with God.
Exactly. And I love that place of coming, of the breath, being the way in which we know how to come back to that place of participating all of the attention here with nothing left over to be in the self.
So wonderful to know that we have everything we need.
Well, and then it's a practice. Because if I wasn't practicing, I wouldn't even be aware that of all those flitting emotions and where I feel separated and how to articulate that experience that is so universal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Penny?
This somehow feels related to what was just said. Yesterday, I was in the garden, and there was an experience of someone having passed away, having left us. And so I was in the garden, and I was watching the puppies, which were alive with bees. Alive with bees. And I just had this sense of how utterly impersonal life is, mm-hmm. and how hugely abundant life is. That it lives. You know? That it just lives, because that's what it does.
Yeah.
And that it has nothing to do with us.
And it has nothing to do with us, and I didn't hear that.
And everything to do with us. This feels connected with what you just said. I'm having trouble even putting words to it, but it's one of those moments of like everything matters and nothing matters. You know, uh-huh. It's one of those. It felt like seeing those kind of conundrums that Zen is always posing. That seem like paradoxes and an art experientially uh-huh. paradoxes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So everything is dying and everything's wildly alive.
Wow. Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with us, and it's who we are.
And life doesn't have a problem with any of it.
Yeah.
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 So I don't know. It felt just so simple
uh-huh.
and huge
uh-huh.
and quiet.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Simple. Huge and quiet.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, with all of the aliveness, all of the abundance, and to actually feel the quiet behind all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, so there was a procedure we all engaged in, and it was not necessary, and it was totally welcome. That's part of that whole life thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But life is going to do whatever it does anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we chose a way to participate.
Uh-huh.
And we might not have. It wouldn't have made a big difference to life, and yet it contributed to life.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know. It's like one of those mysteries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then it might not made it a difference to life, and yet... It was a contribution to life.
Contribution.
You know,
one of the forms life was taking in that moment.
Exactly. All these life forms coming together and yep. participating in this way in life, you know, embracing it and accepting it and, you know,
yep.
I don't know, project joyfully, whatever, you know. And
if we hadn't done it, it would just have gone on.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bees would have done what they were doing.
Yeah.
The poppies would have done what they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. And yet, I don't know, this is it would have gone on, but yet there was that moment of life, of life just contributing a certain richness.
Totally.
That, you know, life would have gone on, but yet there was that moment when it was offered back in this form that was
yeah.
really beautiful.
It's a funny thing, it's like, it goes on, irrespective of us, and it is always inviting us in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we come in, even when we try to stay out,
yeah.
we're part of it.
Yeah. Wow. So we might as well just jump in and enjoy the, yeah.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
very funny.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I love that. I've been watching a lot. The bees in the garden.
Oh my God!
Oh my gosh! If you want to learn about living, and I just watch them rolling around, getting that pollen on their little legs, and oh my gosh! And then
it's just shameless.
It is. It made me. I mean, I just like, wow, what are they up to? You know, and it's like I realized I didn't know a thing about honey, pollen, all of that, and so I educated myself. Wow, you know, it's pretty, and yeah. I knew to sit with the bees. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Renee?
Yeah, doing the exercise in the email class, the last one, recording with the mentor and experiencing authenticity.
Uh-huh.
It speaks to the last two particular conversations. And I frequently get memories of being a child and not having all of this conditioning.
Uh-huh.
And it's usually running around outside playing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And being pretty small, like maybe like four or something
uh-huh.
like that.
Uh-huh.
And being one with everything.
Uh-huh.
And just experiencing all that's there to experience and being joyful when it was joyful and sad when it was sad. And we had this little boy across the street who had muscular dystrophy. Mm. And we used to go get our wagon and get him to take him around everywhere. And there was no problem. Mm. It was with him or us. Mm. And a few times he'd fall out and put it back in. I think his mother got upset. So I just, you know, just that gap that opens up to let that authenticity and after recognition is, you know, you can go back to experiencing that, what the bees are experiencing, what the poppies are, you know, or I can project what they're experiencing. And it's just so cool to have the opportunity to do that, and that we kind of forget who we are, I guess, you know, and what all of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We kind of go to sleep, don't we? But yet, you know, some part remembers, you know, there's always that memory, and just as you described that, boy, we remember that place of, you know, just going outside and running and being one with life, and it just seems like the heart never gives up on that quest to return to that place. Mm-hmm.
And that we were like that at one point, and still are, but all of that's filling up all that space, that authenticity, and it was. And then I watched conditioning come in with the way to get me back into the conversation. And it was about fear and worry and bringing up problems that weren't there, you know. And that was going to be a permanent thing, you know, that, well, you can't be happy because this might happen. And, you know, it does go so against, it so tries to make everything permanent.
Yeah.
And we're living in impermanent. I mean, life is impermanent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's all you have is right now, this moment, and it just changes super fast.
I just, you know, I'm reminded that, you know, how often we talk if we just drop the stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we just drop the story, you know, even in these big bodies, we'd run out and find, you know, our neighbor and put him in a wagon. You know? We would not, you know. We just do it, you know. It's just that constant engagement that stops us from that first impulse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now I feel like, oh, his mom's gonna get mad at me if he falls out of the wagon.
Would I be, you know, intruding on him? And I, you know, is it politically correct? You know, just all the stuff that just goes.
And as those little kids running around, we just do whatever.
Yeah. And if somebody says, don't do that, well, you know, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a lot of gratitude.
Yeah. Thank you. Bobby?
So I've been practicing for a time now with a change in behavior of focusing on just getting back here. And it was in response to, you know, just trying to get out of a conversation or maybe a judgment, whatever kind of like thing was going on up here. This is a way to kind of come back here. And I didn't have words for like seeing more of the prospect. I saw it today that conditioning would want me, often would like a come back and then just move on. You know, attend to the next thing in life or do the next task or whatever it is. And I realized the more I was practicing on getting back to here, what came revealed is that while I was dropping that conversation, I wasn't dropping ego eye. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I was still believing there was someone to do those things. Yeah. It wasn't that just coming back here and seeing what was there in life in that moment. But like that wasn't enough. I still need to be an ego eye to live.
Yeah. I think I'm hearing what you're saying. It's, it's a way different thing to come back here, be with the breath, and then pick it up and and do the next thing that ego, you know, is on the agenda for the I to do, versus just being here, present, and see what is the next thing life offers.
Yeah, and it was almost like a trick of conditioning. That, like, I just needed to drop whatever was going on.
Uh-huh.
And then that was enough. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that when I got back here and I may have for a second been present, when I moved on, it was really once again consulting with conditioning and believing there was an ego I that I needed to be attached to be in life.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that seems like that's the biggest thing that I keep saying over and over again is that being here is enough.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And there's this constant pull from conditioning to tell me that's not enough. There is this ego, it doesn't say ego I. I have this idea that I am a person that I'm responsible, that it's up to me, that I need to do it right, that when I don't do it right, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And that it's just that once the dropping being willing to kind of let go of the ego I, even just for a second, and just come back here, that really is, it's not just all that's necessary, it's where everything is.
Uh-huh.
Or is it, you know, like, the believing in that ego I keeps me in that place of, like, there's something that I need to know, I need to get, I need to figure out, I need to accomplish, which keeps me from accomplishing, being successful, seeing things, being aware, figuring things out. It's like with the class, that, you know, this third one, where, like, you know, in my Enneatype, it's like, you know, believing that I'm disconnected, right? And the more I kind of looked at my experience of it is I'm anything but disconnected, and ego is doing everything to keep me disconnected, to have an experience of its disconnection.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's that same thing of, like, where am I looking to for my information, essentially?
Yeah. We might actually have an experience of there is nothing wrong with us, you know.
If we
weren't engaged with it, and engaged with its disconnection, as you say, it's how it's just always projecting that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lakota.
Loving the email class. So helpful. And with this third assignment, I had this experience of just such profound resistance